welcome to Pop a la Carte podcast number 5. We are on 5, right?
Yes, we are.
Like, what number is it? Yes, number 5. This week, we're going to talk about some new DC TV spoilers, so we're warning you now, spoilers ahead. These are filming spoilers, and we'll also be talking about Spider-Man Homecoming and a new Japanese anime that you can't actually watch yet, but you should be watching out. So I'm Valerie.
I'm Tatiana.
And I'm Andrew.
And I'm Jessica.
And we'll go ahead and start with the DC TV stuff. So Jessica, take us away.
Okay, so there's a couple of different spoilers that we have for different DC TV shows. I guess we'll start off with Legends of Tomorrow. Tatiana, you know there's like a new character?
Yes. Tala Ash is playing a new Muslim hacktivist who is known in the comics as Isis. She gains like the power of and spirit of Isis, but in the comics she's not a hacktivist, so I'm not sure how close she's going to be to her original counterpart, but we do know that she's supposed to be a regular for the season, so we should be seeing a lot of her. And her name is Zari Adriana Tomas.
I just hope they're not going to go another Felicity type route, because when I hear like hacktivist or like activist hacker, then I'm worried with like Guggenheim that he's going to do like another Felicity copy in a different package, and I think we've seen enough of that, so I hope that they have something a little bit different to her character to kind of separate her from like the Felicity
Definitely.
Model.
Yeah, I mean, I think like the issue with it is it's either going to be like the accusations of copying Felicity, or it's going to be like, well, she's not like Felicity, therefore she sucks.
Right.
And I don't want either of those. But I hope it means that there's going to be a lot more of, like, the team getting to put in their individual talents, you know? Instead of just leaving everything to Gideon or...
There was, just, yeah, just going off.
Just not do doing anything. Yeah, exactly. Because they did have sort of, like, a season-long arc with Rey of being like, well, I can't really be a superhero right now, so, like, what do I contribute? And they showed Nate, even though Nate was... my least favorite part of season 2, his specialty is history. So he always brings that up. And I think Zari comes from a little bit in the future. So she's going to have like a different kind of historical information to provide.
Hey, are all the characters coming back from last season, or are they getting rid of people like they did after season 1?
Everyone is supposed to be coming back. Although I've been looking at some of the, I guess the only really spoilers that I've seen is just stuff that Katie has been giving pictures of from like behind the scenes. And the only person that I don't see right now that I'm worried about is Amaya.
Mm-hmm.
She's not in any of, like, the pictures. And so, but she was there on the season finale when they all...
Yeah.
They were all in the ship when it kind of crash-landed and dinosaurs were kind of running around. So I'm a little bit confused about
right.
what happened in, like, time gap.
For a second, they made it sound like she was going to go back to, you know, make her babies and have her grandchild. And then she was like, no, I'm going to stick around for a while. And Guggenheim did say in one of the TV line spoiler things, I think, he did say that there was going to be, like, potentially the issue of whether or not the vixen that we know from Arrow and her own show, Mari, is her and Nate's granddaughter, which I really hope they don't do, because that's, I don't think that she is their granddaughter, first of all. And secondly, I feel like that's the only interesting thing about the relationship is the tension of... what's the point of having a relationship now if I know that I need to leave eventually? And if you take that out, then it's like, I don't care about Nate at all now. There's like always a man I hate. I don't know why I'm like this. I'm sorry. Yeah. Anyway, so, what do you think, Andrew?
I was wondering, would you guys want to see that other vixen return? Because DC TV, we haven't seen her in a while.
She left for, what was it? Like filming, she wasn't available to film or anything. So it would be interesting to see both vixens or have Amaya meet her granddaughter and see if what kind of, I don't know, reunion.
Because they had that with several other characters met their, you know, grandparent or whatever. And it would be nice for Amaya to have something like that, at least for an episode.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, the whole thing about characters coming in and out, I think Legends and those Arrows and Flash and all those shows, they're those shows that characters could come in and out as long as you keep the core members there.
Yeah, I don't know why I worry about this, but that I worry about it happening, but also... Okay, so Mark Guggenheim was the writer of Bart Allen's Flash run in the comics. And since Legends is all about meeting your ancestors and your successors, what if they brought Bart Allen for Legends?
That would be really cool. That I'd be really into.
It would be cool, but do I want Mark Guggenheim to be handling Bart on screen is my question. Okay. This is my question.
That's a big nugget. Like, that's something I think that Flash would want to keep for itself. Mm-hmm. And then maybe he can show up on Legends later.
Yeah, he can show up on Legends after. He should show up on Flash first.
On the Flash.
At the same time, there's just so many speedsters on the Flash that I feel like another show could have another one, you know?
Yeah.
We have Barry, Jesse, and was it Wally?
Wally.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It would be funny if after telling us that we're not going to get another new speedster this season, they then put it on one of the other shows instead. Yeah. That'd be actually hilarious.
Like, I want Bart no matter what, but I'm just caution regardless. Oh, well. So, is there anything else that we have on Legends, or should we move on to the mother of all leakers, Arrow?
I'm ready for Arrow.
Okay. Arrow won't shut up about everything that's going on next season. So, especially Steven and David, who tell everyone at cons, apparently. What's going on?
This is what's in DC TV. Like, they spilt everything.
Yes. So we know that Manu Bennett is coming back, not full time, but he's going to make several appearances next season. So there'll definitely be like a Slade and Oliver tension going on in some way. I admittedly did not finish watching this season. I think you did, though, Andrew, right?
Yeah, I did.
I know there was an explosion on the island and everyone maybe fake died. So where are they going from here?
It ended on a cliffhanger with everyone being on Lian Yu and the island exploding, with Ali offshore watching the whole island explode, not knowing if his friends are dead or alive. So hearing that Manu Bennett's going to be in the next season, that might be a spoiler that he did survive the explosion, but there's always a chance that there's going to be more flashbacks, you know.
Oh my god, that's so true. That would be so much trolling. Like, if they killed him off in the present and then he just kept showing up in the flashbacks. Oh, God. I can see this now.
Didn't there be any more flashbacks, though? Didn't they say they were done with flashbacks?
A different kind of flashbacks. They said it was going to be the end, and then they came back, and they were like, just kidding, that was the end of Oliver's journey from the island. Now we're doing flashbacks that could center on anyone, at any time, in any place. Just like... surprise.
That's one thing... One thing that really bothered me, there was one episode last season where they actually flashbacked to something that happened last season. Like, events that happened in between scenes in season 4.
Oh, so yeah.
They could flashback to season 2, season 3, right. All these little things that happened in between, which I don't want to see.
Right.
All these little rewrites of history.
You're like, it was on the cutting room floor for a reason. I don't care. which brings me to the spoiler that, or rumor... that you either will love or you will hate. Like, there is no in-between. You can't not care about it. But apparently, both David and Steven have suggested very strongly that Oliver and Felicity are getting married this season. And very soon, perhaps. Perhaps it will happen by the crossover or in the crossover. What do you guys think about this?
I don't really mind the Felicity thing. I know a lot of people hate it. Mm-hmm. I can go either way.
But a lot of people love it too, right? So
yeah, that's true.
I don't mind it. It doesn't bother me. I feel like the whole just fandom drama around who's getting married first, when are they getting married, is it going to be a double wedding, if it's not going to be a double
Where
wedding.
Where did the double wedding come from? I'm so confused. Everyone's freaking out about a double wedding, and I'm like, no one said a double wedding. No one said this.
Right. I feel like all of that... is more annoying than the actual event will be itself if and when it does happen. I do hope it's earlier so I can just like get it out of the way and like, you know, be done with it.
Right.
And move
I hope the season opens with Oliver Felicity just married and then you have like a flashback to the wedding and then that's the end. Well done.
That would actually be spectacular.
Yeah, I mean, that's how their season 4 started, right? It opened with them, like, living together, and he's about to propose, and you didn't see any of their relationship. So, why not? Just start with them married. And I'm saying that because I'm a hater, and I don't want them to get married in the crossover, but... but that's okay. If they do, then they do.
You don't want to Sarah the Iris Barry wedding with Opacity.
They're not gonna. There's not gonna be a double wedding. That would. And I don't think. I don't. I mean, I think that if there's a wedding in the crossover, there's just one wedding in the crossover, right? Like, it's not gonna be. It's not gonna be two. And it would make sense for it to be Felicity because Arrow is the last show now. So, like, if you're going to have a wedding, it makes sense to have it at the end of the crossover. And then it makes sense to have it on the show that the couple is from. So in that sense, I could definitely see Felicity.
I feel like that's the easiest way to make it work. I feel like you can still make it work with a Barry and Iris wedding.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
It could just be like a break from the. Yeah. That's true. Yeah.
But Arrow is probably the easiest story wise to just do it at the end and have like a happy note on on the end of the crossover. But
I just don't want the entire crossover to be like relating to wedding shenanigans.
That would be boring.
Yeah. So like if it was just like surprise elopement at the end because we're so happy that we succeeded, okay, then that's fine. And just like if Barry and Iris got married and it was in the middle, then it would just happen randomly in the middle and there wouldn't be. It also wouldn't be like a 4-episode through line. So yeah. Either way, no one needs to fight about it. Felicity have been together longer. Well, because they've existed on the show longer. So if they get married first, I don't care. I just don't want the whole crossover devoted to it. And if Barry and Iris get married in the crossover, then Iris will actually get to be in the crossover because she won't be otherwise. Other Arrow thoughts?
I just can't stand Felicity, so I don't care. I liked her with anyone else. Roy, I liked her with everyone else they've shown her with. I don't like her. Because I think that relationship brings out the worst in both of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of agree.
Well, not the worst, because the worst in Oliver was all of Oliver in season one and before he met Felicity.
When but he was killing everybody.
Yes, but it doesn't I don't think it makes him better. Yeah. I agree with that.
More so for her, it's kind of a, I don't know. I feel like she does better on her like solo projects instead of like crying about what Oliver has done or will do or kept secret, stuff like that. So I feel like more in the relationship, if there's something that's bad for one or both of them, I think it's more so a detriment for her character. Kind of takes from her a little bit.
And that's part of why I want them to just get married and get it over with, because I think that to not put the onus of the drama on their relationship, because that's what drags it down. Like, they were fine in, like, the first half of season four before the nonsensical lie about the child. But before that, and they were just their relationship was just in the background while other stuff was going on, then that's the way that it should be. And really on any on any superhero show, right? Like, you don't need to have the drama come from the relationship. Just let them be happy and have drama come from elsewhere.
$10 says that if you marry them off so the relationship or the drama is no longer about that part of the relationship, there's going to be an infertility issue, or they can't decide if they're ready to be or something like that. There will still or be
see Diggle and Lila where they're still lying to each other about everything.
Yeah, what happened to them? I just heard that they are having problems.
Yeah, he feels like she's becoming too Amanda Waller-ish in her position with Argus, and she's there's doesn't seem to be a lot of compromise between what is okay and what's not okay.
All right, well, I accept that. I guess that's a legitimate issue, even though he works for Oliver. But I guess he breaks up with Oliver every season, so never mind. He is correct. So, Supergirl. There's been a lot of casting news for Supergirl. First, Odette Annabelle is going to be playing World Killer Rain, the World Killer Rain, so we know that she's the big bad for the season because she's going to be a regular. And Erica Durance, Lois Lane from Smallville, is going to be taking over the role of Kara's mom from Laura Benanti. Is there anything else y'all have heard?
As far as Supergirl goes, I haven't heard much about that.
Because I've been waiting with bated breath to see if Chris Wood is back on set or not. Because I hope that Mon-El stays away for a while. And once someone thought it was him, but it was really Jeremy Jordan, and I've never been happier to see Jeremy Jordan in my life. Bless you, Jeremy Jordan. But I am actually really excited about Odette Annabelle. I actually really like her, and I'm looking forward to seeing a female villain that hopefully will actually have a real presence throughout the season. Because
yeah,
I think
that's like Super Reign. I'm like dubbing it now. Super Reign is going to be a thing probably.
Oh yeah. Oh, competing in Supercore? Oh my god. Oh no, I don't. Yeah. Battles of the Death.
I looked a little bit about Reign and the World Killers, just like a summary kind of thing. It looks like they're genetically engineered by Kryptonian scientists to be living weapons. So they took like embryos from different worlds and like genetically created these like super weapons.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that at the end of the season 2 finale, that's who was being sent in the pod to Earth.
Right.
I think there was like rumors or theories that maybe it was like Brainiac or something like that, but I think it makes more sense knowing this. I think that, and this is from like Supergirl, the New 52.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, it definitely makes more sense for it to be World Killer.
Her backstory, it makes more sense that it's going to be her that's in the pod.
Yeah.
And then Kara's dad in the story is the one, he had some involvement with the World Killers and creating them. So I'm wondering, because they brought Erica Durance, so we're going to see Kara's mom more on the show, if that's going to be kind of her role, since Supergirl likes to take like the, instead of like the male protagonists, villains, etc., there's a lot of like female heavy characters in those positions. So I'm wondering if it's going to be Kara's mom that's more.
Yeah, like, I think that makes sense. I think that makes sense. And that's what I would hope to see, right? Like, I feel like we barely got to know whoever Kara's real dad was in the first season. And even though it's weird to have the casting change, I would much rather have a new mom than not see Allura's role in it. So, but I have to wonder, like, why did all of these Kryptonian rulers make so many enemies? Like, everyone, they're really bad at their jobs. Because, like, all of season one was just, like, how they messed up and basically brought about the destruction of the planet. And now it's someone hated them so much, they're like, let's send this World Killer to destroy a totally new planet just because, presumably, I guess Clark and Kara will be on that planet. You know, like, I don't know why else the planet is... the World Killer's thing. So. Yeah, so... also, I don't understand why Lena does not know the truth yet about Kara.
That was one of the biggest problems last season. They really should have just, like, because it's obvious that they're just going to create tension to try and be like, well, maybe she's going to go bad because she's, like, kept a secret from me. And it's like, really?
Yeah, I feel like based on her personality thus far, it wouldn't turn her evil. Unless it's just, like, she feels like it's such a betrayal because... I guess that there's no one that she can really trust or no one that really trusts her or something. I don't know.
I feel like as much as it's kind of an overused trope that the quote-unquote love interest, if we're going like the Supercore route, doesn't know the hero or heroine's identity, I think that they pulled this off pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
More so than The Flash did in season one with regards to Iris. Because it wasn't like all these people actively lying and keeping her out of the secret. She's kind of, you know, around the secret, but it's not really, it doesn't seem to be like a detriment to the relationship or to the show.
Right, because so she still gets to be involved.
About it.
Yeah, I didn't have an issue with it in and of itself because, like you said, it's not actively lying and like purposely leaving her out. But once Kara knows, the mom is evil and the mom is holding this over her head. If Lena finds out from her mom that Kara is Supergirl, it obviously is going to go badly. So, like, at that point, it's like, how are you not going to tell her? You know, like, are they really going to stretch it out in order to cause her to go evil? Or will they just reveal it in the premiere? Like, extra surprise. Now Lena's part of the team.
I kind of like that tension, though, because, you know, even in, like, last season, there are all these kind of hints about Lena possibly being duplicitous and, you know, she's smarter than her brother, actually. And so there's kind of this almost like, is she playing dumb or is she, you know, does she really know? And, you know, she's a little bit, there's a little bit of mysterious mystery there. So I kind of like that tension, actually.
Well, I just know that I hope that she doesn't join the team, actually, because too many people in DEO is just like, too many people in the Arrow Cave or too many people in Star Labs. And we don't need this.
Yeah.
And they don't forget about her like they do James.
Yeah, it actually took me a little while to get used to her newspaper friend joining the DEO. Like, for one season, you're working at the newspaper, all of a sudden you're a secret agent. It was kind of sudden to me.
Was it Wynn, right?
Wynn, yeah. I forgot his name for a sec. But yeah, I got used to it eventually.
You know, they took him, but then it was like, and it was just to get out of the, out of Cat Cove. And then it was like, well, but we can't bring both Jim and Jimmy over, and James, whatever the fuck was this calling. So then we got the terrible, what was his name?
Guardian.
That was awful. Like, I wanted him to stay in the show, but not like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The whole Guardian, the Guardian thing was weird. He was just, it was just Jimmy playing superhero. Mm-hmm. And plus Guardian is a different character in the comics, and they kind of merge two characters together to make that.
Yeah, I hope that somehow he ditches Guardian next season and we actually get to see some fun times at the newspaper, because I don't know why they don't think that journalism or the press is important in today's day and age. Like, one of your shows should be able to utilize the press correctly, because we need it right now.
It's a big part of, at least, like, for her and for Iris, obviously, on Flash, then it's like, no, we're just going to skip that entirely. It's like, well, the media is kind of important. You could tell interesting stories and incorporate that. You don't have to ditch it completely.
Right, I mean, like...
And, like, leading the city, like, the city as a character, that's one of my biggest gripes about, like, the Flash not letting Iris use her journalism and utilize the CCPN, because so much of the story goes through Star Labs, that we have no idea what Central City thinks about, like, telepathic gorillas taking over the city, or, you know, all the weird stuff that's going on. We have no idea because we don't hear that side of it. And that's the side that Iris and in National City, Kara and James can bring to the story, like bring something fresh.
Mm. Yeah.
So hopefully they do more of that in these new seasons.
Agreed. Speaking of The Flash, there's like no information on The Flash. It's driving me bonkers. They don't want us to know anything. So far, we just know that the Thinker is the big bad for season 4. And Cyril Farrell from Game of Thrones read to be the Thinker. But he is not going to be the Thinker. So that's information. Cyril Farrell from Game of Thrones is someone they were looking at for the Thinker. So I guess that gives you an idea of what it would be like. And he said that, you know, he's the fastest brain alive. And he's like, so he's like a fast talking, cunning kind of guy. And in the comics, he's a district attorney who realizes that he can't defeat criminals that way. So instead, he joins them.
Logical.
Yes. I hope this means that we will get more police, actual police stuff. And if we're getting, you know, law cases, that means we could get more press stuff from Iris. Like, that's what I want to see. And we destroyed Star Labs, so that's fine. But there's no guarantee that's going to happen. Second thing we know is that episode 1 is called The Flash Reborn. So, rebirth.
Barry's coming in.
Yeah. Barry coming out, so you better get this party started. So, that could be the rebirth storyline, or that could be Terminal Velocity. We don't know which way they're going to go, but rumor has it that someone took a photo with Grant Gustin yesterday, and he still had his hideous hiatus beard. So, the Speed Force did not give Barry a razor, or he has not started filming yet, and has just been hanging out on set with his docs.
The weirdest thing is that Emo Barry, like, however many, 10 years in the future, is still clean shaven, but Speed Force Barry has a beard already.
I don't know how that works. I mean, I guess the Speed Force likes facial hair, and and Iris's ghost did not, so Barry kept shaving. That's all I got. Oh yeah, and we know that Kid Flash and Vibe were taking down a samurai-looking metahuman along with Joe West. Yeah, this weekend. So there's going to be some metahuman that looks like a samurai. It's like a mask, a samurai mask happening, and I think he's got a sword too. And Joe West is there also.
Do we know it's a metahuman or just a guy in a samurai suit?
That's true. Like, it could just be a guy in a samurai suit. That's very possible. We have no idea. I don't know why that would take like 2 metahumans and a police officer to take down, but he could be Batman, but a samurai. In which case, it would require that.
That's the closest they can get to Batman. So I could.
There were posters all around Central City with like this noir looking signs. There was like a noir film festival over the summer, and there's like, you know, constant vigilance or something, you know, like with like an eye watching you. So I don't know if that's like there's a scene in another Earth, like Earth 19, where things are noir-y, or if they just want to set a scene, like set the stage for some kind of like crime thriller mystery in the first episode, which would go back, I think, hopefully I pretend, to the Thinker being a district attorney. I'm just gonna pray for that. What do you
guys think? So the Thinker's not a speedster, right?
No, he's not a speedster.
Because one thing I've been getting tired of in The Flash, every main villain has to be a speedster. It's almost like an Arrow, how every main villain has to have a bow and arrow to challenge Green Arrow.
Right.
So I just want something different for this season.
Same, because it's so tiring that it's like, oh, I'm not fast enough until the finale when I might be fast enough or someone else might save me. So in this case, he like creates a device that allows him to control other people. So he can control the people's actions, or he can sometimes read minds and telekinesis.
And I remember Savitar gave us that little Easter egg or spoiler in the finale where they're in like Barry and Iris were in the room with the device they used to zap Barry's memories. And he said that would be useful for when they were dealing with the Thinker. So we'll see when that comes back into play.
That's right. The cerebral inhibitor.
Yes.
To make his brain a little slower.
Is Tom Felton back this season?
He hasn't been back filming yet. But no one, like, he was a regular last season, and no one's announced that he's stepping down.
Okay.
And he even did a little thing at the one con that Grant has ever gone to. He went to a convention with Grant, and he, like, proposed to be on The Flash next season. So I feel like he is going to be. I don't know, though.
They only just started back up?
Yes, they've been filming for a week now. So, Jessica, we heard that you saw a film that we can't see yet in Japan.
Yeah. So, FYI, I'm in Japan. So it's like 7:30 in the morning right now. But recently, it's not Studio Ghibli film. It's Studio Ghibli adjacent. Studio Ponoc. They actually premiered Mary and the Witch's Flower, which is based on a book by Mary Stewart called The Little Broomstick. So it's not like an original story. It's a story based off of a Western book. So it's kind of like Howl's Moving Castle and The Secret Life of Arrietty in that sense. And it was directed by, his name right, Yonebayashi, Hiromasa Yonebayashi, who was a previous Ghibli director. I guess when Miyazaki went into retirement, he and a couple other people created Studio Ponoc to kind of continue on the Ghibli tradition of filmmaking, and so this is his first film under that studio, and it has all of, like, so if you're a Studio Ghibli fan, you're a Miyazaki fan, it has all the visual elements of, like, a Miyazaki film, so you'd still kind of get that kind of feeling. I guess a little quick summary of it, it kind of starts off with a lot of action. There's buildings on fire, this girl with red hair, she's stolen something and she's escaping from this magical world, and you see her plummet to Earth, and the thing that she's stolen is these witch's flowers, and the flowers, she loses the flowers when she comes to Earth, and there's this big magical forest, and then you cut to present day with this young girl named Mary, who also has red hair. And the weirdest thing for me is it was in Japanese, of course, but it was simple dialogue, so I could understand about like 80% of it. But it was so, like, jarring in my head because the girl's name is Mary Smith. And that's speaking of my dog in the background. Sorry. So her name is Mary Smith, and she's kind of like this overeager girl, doesn't really know where she fits in. She's living with her grandmother. She's kind of, like, feels out of place. Everything that she does to be helpful kind of goes wrong. And then one day she follows these cats into the woods and finds the witch's flower. and the magic from the flower gets on her and gives her these magic powers, and she flies a broomstick into the sky, into this college of Endor, which is like, it's kind of like Hogwarts in the sky.
So is this, the college already exists, like she knew about that college already, or she just winds up there?
No, she just, no, like the broom took her to the sky, to this magical world where she feels special because red hair is special there, and she's got all these powers and people think that she's really cool, and so she kind of has this like magical adventure, but of course everything is not as it seems, and then stuff happens, and so it's kind of like a magical adventure for her. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of like the gist of the story. I didn't get to read the book before I watched the movie, so I'll probably go back and read it, and I'll fill in some plot holes for me, but it was a decent movie. I don't think it was the best movie. I give it like a solid 7 compared to the other Ghibli Miyazaki films, but that could be the 20% that I didn't, that was lost translation for me. Or it also could be that it's based on like a Western book, so it's based on you know, somebody else's material. But I think if you are a Ghibli fan, a Miyazaki fan, then you'll still really like this movie.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, the animation that I saw for it really did look like it was coming from Studio Ghibli. So I think,
yeah,
in that sense, would you say that they did maintain the spirit of the visuals?
Yeah, definitely. And there's definitely a lot of Miyazaki Ghibli, like, motifs, like the flying, the schools in the sky. So you've got that. The
the most important part of any Ghibli film. Yeah.
The magical minions are kind of, they look like sea creatures, and there's this really cool scene in the beginning where they're chasing the girl that stole the flowers, and you've got these, like, dolphin-looking minions flying through the air, so it's like the sea, but in the air, so it's really cool visual, and there's a lot of the magical Hogwarts in the sky. Has a lot of the like moving staircases and clouds that are elevators, and it's just really cool visually. Okay. And like the animal motifs, environmentalism, all of that are still like woven throughout the movie. So, you know, those like the good hallmarks of a Ghibli film are still in there.
All right. I don't know when it's going to come out in the US, but I would imagine by 2018 probably, yeah.
I don't think so. I don't know how long. Coming the other way for films to get from the U.S. to Japan to take several months, and it's really frustrating, honestly, for me. So now you get to see how I feel.
Well, I mean, I sort of knew how you felt with Your Name, because I had heard about Your Name and how good it was, and it was like the most popular film in Japan. And then it finally came here a couple months ago, I guess. I have no sense of time. But it was like the best film of 2016 in Japan, and then we got it in 2017. So hopefully we'll get this one in 2018.
I think because it is a Studio Ghibli-esque film, that there's a greater chance that it'll come over to the United States sooner rather than later. So have it on your radar. Take this time to read the book so you'll understand the movie.
Yeah, I mean,
well, it'll actually be like, there'll be subtitles for us, so that, like, hopefully that'll help a little bit. Although then they change the story half the time, right? They do the subtitles.
Yeah.
It'll probably be dubbed in English by the time it gets to the US.
Yeah, so. But I can't do it. I can't do dub. I don't know why. I'm just.
I can't either.
I don't know. It's good. But yes, and if you haven't seen Your Name, you should definitely check out Your Name, which is already, it's at least available on, like, websites. Because I don't know if it's out on DVD yet. I guess
I was going to say, the whole, like, just an aside of the whole time lapse between you getting movies and not. So my husband is Welsh, and he moved here 12 years ago? 12 and a half years ago? Something like that. And he used to complain all the time because it would take, like, 6 months for them to in the UK to get a movie. 3 to 6 months, right? Mm-hmm. And now he moved here, and seriously, it's like they get the Marvel movies, for instance, a week or two before we do. No, he's like, that's the country, and now they get the movies sooner. It's just a spite.
Yeah, it was just his luck, you know. He's got if you guys went back, then they would go back to the other way, and you wouldn't get the movies anymore.
Exactly.
He would cross in the air.
Be like, you know what? We're gonna start waiting again. Ha ha. Justice Fight Mad.
Yeah, I remember when Moana came out in the U.S. and everyone was, like, talking about how great it was. They didn't. I don't remember when it came out, like, the month it came out in the U.S., but it didn't come out in Japan until, like, March 2017, mm-hmm. like, the end of March. So everyone's like, oh, Moana's so great. And I'm like, I can't see it. So.
I have to be honest, I still haven't actually watched Moana.
You're terrible. It's really good. I think it's my, I don't know. It's definitely my favorite of, like, actually, who can I, what can I compare it to? I don't know. It's, like, my favorite of, like, the literally most recent. So, I don't know. Frozen. It's better than Frozen. I don't know what else is recent.
I mean, I didn't see Frozen until, like, 2 or 3 years after it came out, too. So, I just, I'm not in a rush to see Disney movies anymore, I guess. I don't know. Sad, though.
It is tragic.
All right, well, I think move on to Spider-Man. So if you want to,
yes,
we should say goodbye to Jessica, who has not seen it yet and has to get to work in Japan anyway.
Thank you for joining us, Jessica.
Thanks, guys.
Bye, Jessica. Nice to meet you.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you. Have fun at work. Bye. Tatiana and I have spoken privately about what we thought about the movie. So before we go into what we thought, I want to know what you thought, Andrew, because you're the one who just saw it today.
Yes.
Yeah, I literally just saw it, came out of theaters 2 hours ago. And I already know I probably completely disagree with you after I saw your post on Facebook.
Oh.
I actually really enjoyed it. I really liked it. I liked Tom Holland was great. He was a great Peter Parker and a great Spider-Man. One thing I will agree with, something you said something on Facebook about him being Iron Man light.
Yeah.
That did get kind of annoying. And in the comics, he doesn't really have tech like that. And if he does have tech like that, it's after so many years of experience and he's built it himself, like whether it be in Parker Industries or something like that, not as a high school team. So I feel like Marvel doing this and having Tony Stark build him a suit is kind of just fast-tracking him to that yeah. stage in his life. But I was able to get past it, and I thought it was really fun.
I do know somebody who was saying that, because I saw it for the second time yesterday. And so one of my friends who was with us was saying, you know, it feels like they're setting him up to replace Iron Man, because the speculation, we know nothing, but the speculation is that Tony's going to die in Infinity War or Avengers War. Probably Avengers, not actually Infinity War, but one of those two movies. Although everybody's probably going to die in Infinity War and then be brought back, and then some people are going to die for real in the Avengers War. But anyway... And I get that. Like, that's not the problem I have. The problem I have with it is Tony gives it all to him. He barely does anything himself. And yes, we were told, and we see him doing the web fluid a little bit, and we were told about that in Civil War, but it's like, it's his own movie, and you hardly get to see him do any of that kind of stuff. And so if he ends up being the tech guy in the future, it's like, well, okay, but he's only doing what Tony did. Like, he's just improving on what Tony did as opposed to coming up with his own thing himself. That's why it makes him Iron Man light. And I heard that the AI Karen was actually added. She was a last minute add. And I'm like, why? Why did you do that? Because that is the worst part of it.
The AI was creepy.
So that's Iron Man.
When he starts talking about Liz and she was like, well, I wouldn't be disappointed if I knew it was you. And I was like, you're Jennifer Connelly. Stop. You're like a grown woman.
Oh, that was Jennifer Connelly?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
You're at least twice Tom Holland's age.
So. The parts that I liked about it, I really loved. Like you said, I think Tom Holland is, as performance-wise, the best Peter Parker and the best Spider-Man. Like, he really has what it takes to play the role. And I think that the homecoming stuff, the high school stuff was so great. I really loved the casting for all the kids. I loved their interactions. It was all great. I love Zendaya's MJ. I think she's like super funny and like a different, if you can't call her Mary Jane, then like that's an interesting new different take on MJ. So that's great. Best friend, also great. All of that. I loved it so much. I wish that was like the whole movie. But yeah. I did have the issue with his hero journey in that I like the idea that he can't really defeat the villain at the end. Like, he doesn't actually stop the Vulture. It's like an accident that the Vulture stopped. So that in itself would be fine if we had gotten to see him work on making his own suit, you know? Don't like that he gets the Iron Spider suit. I wish that the entire time he was working with something that he had created himself. Like the web, you know, when we saw him make the web stuff in class, I would have liked a little bit more of that to see his actual skills. And the other thing that I wish we had seen more of was how the Vulture's weapons are affecting the little people. Because that's who Spider-Man's supposed to fight for. Like the owner of the deli that got destroyed and then we don't see him again. And like Donald Glover's character, Miles Morales' uncle, who says he doesn't want these guns in there because his nephew lives in this neighborhood. I would like to see a little bit more of something like that. You know, like that's who Peter's protecting. But we don't really see them again after Aaron Davis says bye. So,
after he complains about his melting ice cream.
Yes, his melting ice cream.
I gotta say, that scene had me cracking up, that intimidation mode.
That was so funny. Yeah.
That's funny. I kind of felt like that was not really a stab, but it was kind of mocking, you know, heroes like Batman and stuff and Arrow, you know, but it was really funny.
Yeah,
like, I literally teared up, cracking up.
Yeah, I mean, the funny parts were so funny. Like, there was so much great humor in this movie. So, yeah, I think that the real, like, weak spot is just that they wanted to cram Iron Man in there. And I think that undercut Peter's story, like, as a hero a little bit.
And it's not Iron Man being in the movie or even being the mentor figure that I have the problem with. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't mind that. I thought that was okay. It's just that it feels like he gives Peter everything and Peter isn't, like, it's like he's hindered. I mean, especially because that suit, honestly, it's hard to tell what powers Peter has.
Mm-hmm.
It's suit doing all of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, it literally feels like you could have put anyone in that suit and it would still be, they would still be Spider-Man. Like, they'd still have the power. And especially after coming from Civil War, I think that's the one problem of maybe they shouldn't have it. As much as I absolutely adore him in Civil War. Like, he's one of the best parts in that movie. And I love that movie. But I almost feel like they wanted to make him so great, and then they had to regress him. Mm-hmm. And, like, you know, you literally see him using his Spidey sense in Civil War, and then this movie, everybody's like, does he even have a Spidey sense? He gets punched, like, 3 or 4 times.
Right.
Yeah, I didn't think about that. So we were talking about that after we saw the film, and I can't remember once where he actually used his spider sense.
Yeah.
No, he doesn't. Whereas in Civil War, you see the part where he's fighting with Bucky and Falcon. You know, Bucky throws something at him. He's looking another way. This thing comes flying. He manages to avoid it.
Mm-hmm.
And then picks it up and throws it back at Bucky. So you know he has the power in Civil War. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, wait, but maybe he doesn't really have it.
Right.
And I was arguing with somebody about, you know, he should be able to latch onto things a lot easier than he seems to be doing in his own movie. That person argued whether or not he would be able to stay stuck to the plane, because he seems to have a really, really hard time staying on that plane. And as far as I understand, Spidey should be able to do that. But even if you want to argue that, okay, it's going too fast and it's too high and, like, he can't do it, he has a hard time with the Washington Monument, and that should be a piece of cake.
That's true.
You know, and
Tobey Maguire would have climbed up that a lot easier.
And it makes sense for him to have to break through ballistic glass windows or glass would shatter his bone when he should be able to latch onto that window and pull it out of the building.
Right.
Look at how strong he is.
I mean, like,
right.
I loved the Washington Monument segment once he broke in. It's like the whole part where he's like actually saving them. Like, I thought that was like super intense and like great, and I felt all the emotions. Yeah. But the climb up there took so long. It was just like, it was like such a big wind up. And I think that was maybe that's like my issue with the battle scenes even more than like his powers or not.
I didn't mind that so much.
I don't think that actually bothers me quite as much. But I do feel like he didn't need the AI to be telling him how to do it.
Right.
Because that's another of the, he should be able to figure that out. Just like when he's stuck in the damage control warehouse, he should be able to figure that out by himself. Like, he goes to a magnet school, which I'm assuming it's not just a charter school, it's a magnet school that he had to be smart enough to get into. Because he's not rich, so he couldn't pay to get into it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it almost feels like they don't show enough of him. As much as they tell you he's smart, like, they keep telling you about how smart he is, they don't actually show you how smart he is.
I actually,
he answers one question in class.
Right, yeah. That's how you know he's smart. And they say that they need him for the decathlon, but then they didn't need him. I do think that it's in a position to be better for the second movie to be a lot better because Iron Man won't have to be involved, and then hopefully they'll just forget about the elements that the suit has and just let it be a Spider-Man suit. I did love all the side characters that we met, and I want to know more about all of them. They didn't really bring up Uncle Ben in this one, which is fine because you don't need it to slow down the story, but at the least it would be good to mention him by name because that is what happened to Aunt May.
That is one of my complaints about it, though, is, and it's funny, because when I read some of the reviews before I watched it, there was somebody who was like, well, they never even mention Aunt or Uncle Ben, and that's a problem, and I was like, well, I don't mind them skipping the origin story, and then I watched it, and I realized, I was like, okay, I didn't need them to show him die and all of that kind of stuff, but Matt actually pointed out a really great way they could have done it, because you never get the feeling that he's really grieving.
Right.
The only time he really says anything is how it affected her.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, but he was basically your father.
Mm-hmm.
So it should have affected you too.
Right. Like, and that would explain why he wants Iron Man to be his mentor.
Yeah. And all they needed to do, and this was Matt's idea, all they needed to do was that scene where he's like, I need a suit. I need your help. All they had to do was just have like May say something about like, you haven't worn this for a year or something, or mm-hmm. like, you know, maybe you can make a happier memory with it this time or something. And just a teeny little thing. Or like when they're doing the Windsor, trying to figure out the Windsor knot.
Oh, yeah. Like, oh, your Uncle Ben could have done this or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. And or even have pictures of him around. There's mm-hmm. not a single picture of a man that could be Uncle Ben.
Yeah.
Whereas you see Marita from Captain America, the Howling Commando from Captain America, First Avenger, you see his descendants. Mm-hmm. As the principal, and there's a picture and pictures of the Howling Commandos and all of his war memorial.
Oh my god, you know what? I just realized that was supposed to be that.
Oh. I mean, obviously everyone knows Uncle Ben, but if you didn't, let's say you just walked into the Spider-Man movie, you might think that Aunt May just raised Peter by herself, because Peter seems fine.
That's the thing. I was like, I don't need to see the whole thing again, but just... That was a real big fail line because one of the great things about Spider-Man is the heart, and there was none because you didn't have that. And I do think it would have been such a simple fix. And that's my biggest problem with the movie is, like, especially having seen it again, I loved what I love, which is the majority of the movie,
mm-hmm.
so much that it actually makes the parts I didn't like, the Iron Man light and the lack of heart, it makes those worse because they would have been such easy fixes. Because my fix for Iron Man light and him getting everything handed by Tony was literally all you had to do was, so at the end of the movie, instead of getting the suit back, you show him at a sewing machine.
Yes, exactly.
And creating his own.
Yeah, that I completely agree with. That's actually the route I thought that we were going to go.
Yeah.
So I was surprised to see that that little gift on his bed.
Or even you could give it back to him, but have him go back in and be like, okay, but I don't need all this shit.
Right. Like, he could, like, put it away or put it in his closet and then go back to the one he's working on. So that you know that he's going to be a hero on his own terms.
Yeah, that would have been a lot better.
What do you guys think of May finding out at the end?
Oh, I thought that was fun. Because she doesn't really have a... Like, she didn't get to do anything this movie. Other than just, you know, so like... Hopefully this means she will get to do something.
Other than be the butt of three hot Aunt May jokes.
Yeah.
Do we really need three?
Because they kept suggesting, like, she's going to freak out or she's going to, like, stop me from doing things. I think it's much more fun if we actually see that happening. Like, he's a superhero and Aunt May's like, well, you better be home in time for dinner, you know?
Kind of like, though, that, you know, because, like, in the comic, right? And even in the Raimi movies, I've only watched Amazing Spider-Man once, and I never saw the second one, so just to put that out there. It is kind of implied that she knows, but she doesn't talk to him about it.
Right.
Because it's kind of like a, no, she's going to stay, like, away. She's worried about him, but she's not going to freak out. And I kind of like that better, but I guess we'll see where it goes, because obviously it didn't go very far, so
right. Who knows? We don't know what's going to happen.
The thing that worries me, too, is now, so we went from Civil War, where it seems he's he was perfectly fine with all of his powers, and, you know, he just got a better, cooler suit, looking suit. It didn't feel like, you know, except for the improved web shooter in Civil War, it didn't really feel like he got much more from the suit. It was just pretty. And he was really powerful to this, where he kind of regressed, and then we have to go back to Infinity War and Avengers 4, and then after Avengers 4, so Avengers 4 is 2019, May. July, I guess, is when the next Spider-Man movie is. And we've been told it's like literally, it takes place like 4 minutes later. You have to assume they're going to pump him up for Infinity War and Avengers 4 and then redress him again for his own movie. It, you know, he's still going to be a 16-year-old. Because Homecoming apparently takes place in 2020. In the future. Unless we're wrong about when Avengers took place, because that was 2012, and we're told this is 8 years later.
Oh.
Yeah, that 8 year thing got me confused.
Oh, I was like, has it been 8 years? That's true. Okay, so it hasn't been 8 years, is what you're saying. It's been less than 8 years. Was it after the first Avengers?
Yeah, that's after the Chitauri invasion in Avengers, which came out in 2012.
Mm-hmm.
And as we've always known, it took place in 2012. The first few movies, the Invisible movies and Avengers, all took place like concurrently, but then we've always thought that that took place in 2012.
Wow.
So if that's the case, we're then told it's 8 years later, which would be...
So either they made a mistake or they've just told you that Avengers actually took place in 2009.
Yeah. Somebody needs to ask Kevin Feige that question. Because
all right, well, that's a good one. That's a good one.
So I'm not the only one who's like, wait, what?
That's confusing, especially because it's a shared universe.
I love that Gwyneth Paltrow was in the movie and that they put them back together.
Oh, thank God. Cute. Yes.
But does anyone else feel like that was a throwaway because she's not going to be in Infinity War and Avengers 4 and Tony's going to die?
I thought it was kind of a throwaway. Honestly, I was surprised by it. I kind of liked the whole lonely, sad Tony Stark better than Gwyneth Paltrow. That was something I really liked about Civil War, that what they gave him in the beginning, when he realized that he wasn't with Gwyneth Paltrow anymore, or Pepper Potts.
I liked that just scene, to see him all,
you know.
But I prefer their relationship. I think Tony will die.
Don't get me wrong. I do like them. They're great. They were great together. They had those first three Iron Man movies. They had really good chemistry. I liked them. But I really like that aspect about Civil War also. So
yeah. They're one of the few relationships in the MCU that I like, because most of the time I'm just like, I don't watch these movies for relationships. I watch the movies for superheroes. Just give me the fighting. at least romantic relationships. I love seeing the friendships, but... I don't really care. I mean, I guess like the Liz storyline didn't bother me because that was cute and he was a teenager and whatever. But for the most part, you know, like I hate Thor and Jane. I hate Thor. Right. But that's largely Natalie Portman. And I hate Sharon Carter and Steve Rogers. Like, ugh. Mostly because that's not developed and it didn't win. And Creepy because of Raging
Carter. No, but my only problem with it was just that because it was a throwaway, like we don't see how or why they got back together, just like we didn't really see how or why they broke up. So
yeah,
that's the aspect that I don't like about it. It's like, but I am happy they're back together. I just would have preferred, like, obviously Pepper was still in his life, even if they were broken up. So I'd preferred if that had been the moment they had gotten back together, you know, even if it was just in one scene, rather than the moment that you just see that they're already together.
But we're never getting an Iron Man 4.
Exactly. So it's never going to happen. And you're, like you said, Tony's probably going to die. So I'm okay with it. I've made my peace. Pepper and Tony are together until he dies. Yay.
Until he dies. And then we never see her reaction. Or we just see her randomly.
Because so far, women in Marvel rarely matter unless they are directly tied to a man romantically. So we shall see how that changes. Or if they're Black Widow, who then had to be tied to a man romantically for unknown reasons, unbeknownst to us.
Which is apparently going to be erased, it sounds like. From what she's said.
I'm okay with this. Even though, again, if we had to suffer through it, then we should get an explanation for why it goes away.
Well, she says there's a really touching scene with them, but, like, it was a hard one to film, so I'm guessing that we do see...
So they'll, like, break up for good.
I mean, it's the Russo brothers. They're pretty... And Mark and Cecily are in it, so...
Mm-hmm.
I think pretty... You know, if I could, I would have them write and direct everything. Well, maybe not everything.
Everything.
I do love James Cameron his version of the fans, but for the most part, they're the best ones, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't wait for Infinity War, but I'm also really afraid, because... I am a huge, 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 huge Cap fan, and I am mentally preparing myself because I assume he's going to die.
Aww. Well, good luck with that. I didn't think he was going to die, but now I'm concerned.
I do like Iron Man 2, and so I'm sad that Tony's going to die, but I also feel like at this point his shadow is looming so large over the MCU that it's kind of the MCU needs it to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I am also a huge fan of the brotherhood, the friendship of Steve and Bucky, and we're literally, you got to assume what, Bucky's probably going to come out of cryo in a post-credit scene for Black Panther, and he'll get like a few minutes to be like, hey, bros, and then he's gonna die.
Well, then like, maybe Bucky will take his place, right, as the next Captain America.
Yeah, but he's still gonna have to watch his best friend die.
Yeah. All right, why are you so sure he's dying?
Because he does in this, well, he should have died in Civil War, right?
Yeah, but...
If you went by the...
Yeah.
And... I really do think that, I think it might, we might get Tony dying, and it looks like Steve dies, but they leave it open where he might come back, because that's also what happened on the internet, right? He did come back.
Right.
Yeah, well, everyone always comes back.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's comic book. I think somebody has to really die, and be dead,
for good,
because we've gotten to that point where it's like, okay, but you gotta kill somebody, and there's too many characters.
Mm-hmm.
And Robert Downey Jr. isn't getting any younger. But I do think, as much as he's kind of backpedaled things that Chris Evans has been saying, I'm like, I think he likes it, but at the same time,
he's ready to do something else. Yeah.
So that's why it's like, I wouldn't be surprised if they kind of leave it open where they're like, oh, okay, Bucky is taking over, but maybe a post-credit scene.
Mm-hmm.
Which, by the way, post-credit scene at the end of Spider-Man Homecoming.
That was so cute!
Was that not the best?
Oh my god! I totally forgot to mention that. Yes, Captain America's educational videos were incredible, and that's exactly good. Like that's the humor that was so prevalent in this film. That was so good. It really made it enjoyable. But yes, the ending was so funny. I was like, patience. It's not always rewarded.
That was funny.
I was dying.
I loved it. I loved it.
Yeah, those videos were great, and they had to have been a riot to film.
Mm-hmm.
Although it's so hard, like, it totally makes sense that they put him in the Avengers 1 costume, but that is the worst costume, and I feel bad for Chris Evans because he's in that costume so much.
Aww.
And we were looking at it, we're like, you know, we kind of see why he hates it, because it makes him look fat, even though, like, Chris Evans is not fat.
Mm-hmm.
Even when he's not ripped, he's not fat.
Yeah, it did a little bit.
It's not, it's the way that the face is cut.
Mm-hmm.
The way that it's different. It's not in the feeling. Really bad costume. Sorry, Josh. You picked badly for that one.
I think of it as purposely cheesy.
Obviously, Coulson loved it, so I guess that's all that matters.
That is what matters.
The one thing we haven't talked about, probably my favorite part of it was Michael Keaton as a Vulture. I thought he was actually really, really good. Yeah, I really liked the surprise twist that he was Liz's father.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought that was a great twist. I thought he did a great job.
I really liked that it led to that moment with them in the car. I thought that's a moment we don't see too much between a hero and a villain.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was really cool.
Yeah.
Peter Parker, all tense and knowing that he's the Vulture, and then Michael Keaton slowly figuring out that's Spider-Man.
Right.
I thought that was really cool.
And then when he's like, now go show my daughter a good time. And he didn't. Couldn't even do that.
No. So he had even more reason to attack him.
Exactly. Exactly. You ditched my daughter at homecoming to fight me?
Well, something, I mean, I love the Marvel movies, but something that does bother me constantly are the villains. A lot of times we don't have that many memorable villains. Like, Zemo last year was kind of lame. This year, so far, I loved, oh my God, his name's Kurt Russell's character in Guardians. I thought he was
Ego. Ego the Living Planet.
For that. Ego was great. But, yeah, so this villain was definitely memorable, I think, compared to others.
Yeah, he was memorable for sure. I mean, I liked that his motivation seemed really, like, natural and also just, like, felt like a fully formed person. Like, he wasn't all evil. He had, obviously, his soft spots. And I think I was actually surprised when he murdered his lackey who was leaving because I wasn't expecting that from him. He seemed, like, kind of, like, super chill up until that point. Like, I'm just selling crazy weapons. I'm not, you know, a murderer.
I remember he didn't mean to kill him.
He did say that he thought it was the gravity
thing. Yeah, he thought it was the gravity thing, but then I was still like, I was just like, he's really chill with the fact that he just killed him. So it's like, he was like, oh, whoops, wrong one.
Whoops, cover. He knew all along what it was.
Yeah.
I did like him a lot. I thought he was really great. Although their fights were kind of, especially at the, I personally don't like that Peter doesn't ever defeat the villain. He does, like, the villain defeats himself.
Mm-hmm.
Peter is completely, I don't know. And because it's part of the problem is you're trying to show that he grows, but you're giving him the tech, and then you don't show that he can't even beat the villain. Apparently, the only thing he can do is stop bike dealers. Like,
right.
Grand Theft bike is what he calls it, I think.
The Grand Theft bike? Oh, and then he couldn't even find the person whose bike it belonged to. He can give directions properly, okay? It's fine. No, but I will say, it would have been better. I'm just going to go back to the same thing again. But, like, if we had seen that he was unable to fully complete the missions in the Iron Spider suit, right, because he doesn't even know how it works, it gets taken away, and then he was able to stop the villain himself with his own stuff because he's working at his own pace with that. So that would have been better. That would have been, a showing of growth.
Instead of showing him just struggle as much, like, right. He doesn't need this. But he's still not that great. He does, I mean, I get that he needs to grow, but at the same time, there are certain things that he just has those powers.
Right.
And we don't really see that. Yeah. I don't. But like we said, Tom Holland is amazing. And that's, I think, kind of one of the worst parts is, like, Peter is still one of my favorite characters in the MCU now. Like, Tom Holland is so fantastic. And this is the best Peter we've seen so far. Just, it's not the best Spider-Man. It really did make me want to go back and watch the Raimi films, and I think we're actually going to do that.
Yeah, I'm planning on doing that, too.
I was kind of half-watching Spider-Man 2 the other day. I think that's still a fun movie. I still really like Spider-Man 2.
Spider-Man 2 is the best Spider-Man movie.
I love Spider-Man 2. If I could take the cast from Homecoming and, like, put them in, like, the original trilogy story, well, the first two of the original trilogy story, then I would just be so happy. That would be, like...
Yeah, Matt was actually trying to argue, because I think like, if I put them in order, the ones I've seen, which means not Amazing Spider-Man 2, it would be Spider-Man 1, Spider-Man 2, or Spider-Man 2, Spider-Man 1, Spider-Man Homecoming, and then Spider-Man 3, and then Amazing 1. But Matt actually thinks Spider-Man 3 is better
than Homecoming. No, Matt. Matt is wrong again.
His explanation is that it's because Spider-Man 3 is three really great Spider-Man films. They just smushed it all into one, and that's where the problem lies. That if you pulled apart the Hobgoblin story and the Venom story and the Sandman story and made those three different movies, it would have been much better. And I can see that point, but I've only ever watched Spider-Man 3 once.
Right.
And there's a reason for that, because it was such a mess.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay. I'll watch it again for you, but...
Actually, no, they just came out with an alternate cut for Spider-Man 3, which I heard was a little bit better.
Seriously?
I haven't checked it out.
All right, well then that's something to do this week. Check out the trilogy with the alternate cut.
I have a feeling that I'm going to love, like, because Civil War Spidey, but then if you put them all in order, I would say that Civil War Spidey is the best one. If you include that as a Spider-Man movie. I think I might like Spider-Man better in Avengers Infinity War and 4, because I feel like the Spider-Man we get in those movies,
mm-hmm.
because, and it might be because Christopher, you know, Marcus and McFeely are the ones who are writing the movies, that mm-hmm. that they're just better writers. I mean, Spider-Man Homecoming had six
writers. Yeah.
Two, it resets to two.
Mm-hmm.
That's not good.
Yeah, I saw that the, like, original screenwriters had said that what their vision was that it was the idea that, like, just because you're a superhero doesn't mean that you always get the girl or that you always defeat the villain or whatever, you know? Like, and I like that being, like, the message, but I think it would have been a clearer message without four more writers, whoever they are. Like,
you know, I'm thinking about it. I think, as much as I love Spider-Man 2, I think Homecoming might be on par, just for me.
Oh, wow.
On par with Spider-Man 2.
I really like it. I think I'm putting it third, too, but I'd have to rewatch. Like, I know 2 is number 1. I'm pretty sure number 1 is 1 is number 2, and then Homecoming. And then a huge gap. A huge, huge gap. And then Amazing Spider-Man. And then just, like, a black hole. And at the other end of the black hole... where Mon-El is chilling for all of season 3 of Supergirl, I hope, is where Amazing Spider-Man 2 is.
Sorry, I'll be honest. I didn't hate Amazing Spider-Man. I hated Amazing Spider-Man 2. That was terrible. But I thought the first one was okay.
No, I'm just kidding. Amazing Spider-Man 1, I forgot Spider-Man 3. That goes above Amazing Spider-Man 1, for the record. But Amazing Spider-Man 1, my only issue with it, that's not true, I have lots of issues with it. My biggest issue was that I think that Andrew Garfield is such a great choice, but the character wasn't Peter for me. Like, he was super cocky.
Yeah,
he was
like a douche
for yeah, him. Yeah. It just wasn't Peter. I just couldn't. And his chemistry with Emma Stone was great, but I didn't buy into that relationship at all, despite their amazing chemistry. And I really hated the way he was with her. And that he gets her dad killed, and her dad makes him promise not to go near her, and then literally 2 seconds later, he's like, I'm still gonna do it though. And then he gets her killed. You dumb motherfucker. Anyway, it makes me so mad.
You touched on it lightly, Tatiana, but I wanted, just before we wrap up, which we have to do soon, I wanted to mention the Mary Jane, MJ, Michelle debacle.
Right.
As I would call it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I just don't get it. What was the point of that? Because... I've never had a problem. When we all thought that Zendaya was going to be Mary Jane,
mm-hmm.
I thought, that's great. What, you know, cool. I have no problem with that. Everybody seems to like her. That'll be fun. And then it was like, the way they made it, so it's like, well, she's MJ, but she's not Mary Jane. Mm-hmm. It just feels to me like it's a cop-out of the, okay, we're sick of white douche bros getting mad at us for recasting white characters as POC, and so we're gonna compromise and make her MJ, but she's not Mary Jane, so now they can't get mad at us. It's just like, but what? I don't understand. I mean, you could change the character without changing. I've seen stories where people are talking about, like, well, they're like, but this means they don't have to be married to Mary Jane's character. Although, oh my god, I have to get credit to my friend Rachel, who had the most amazing theory, and I'm gonna be so upset when this is not what actually happened, because you know it won't.
Okay.
But what if we're told that Michelle has no friends, and she seems kind of out of, like, place and stuff in this world. What if she is Mary Jane, not just MJ, but actually Mary Jane, but she's it witness protection.
Oh. I like it.
Introducing the story with her.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Something deep, because she has, like, a deep, sad past. Like, Mary Jane was the party girl who hides the horrible things going on in her home. You saw a little bit of that in Spider-Man 1.
Mm-hmm.
And what if that's the thing? Like, they're going to make it even darker. Although, I can't see that. Now that I really talked about it, I can't see that happening.
Well, she might say it in, like, a deadpan thing. Oh, I know, I'm in witness protection, because she just says everything in deadpan, right? And they're like, oh my god, really? She's like, no, I just hate the name Mary Jane. So I told everyone to call me Michelle. You know?
There you go.
You know, that little MJ reveal actually reminded me a lot of the Robin reveal in Dark Knight Rises.
Oh, yes.
It was like, oh, by the way, yeah, my real name is Robin. Oh, by the way, they call me MJ, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that is the equivalent, really. Like, you're right, because obviously Robin's name is not Robin. It's Dick Grayson, yeah. but they're like, everyone knows what Robin means. So they're like, everyone knows what MJ means.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I saw an article where they try to be like, but it's not, like, because of this, it's not like when they say Robin at the Dark Knight Rises. And I was like, that's exactly what it is. What are you trying to say? Same damn thing.
But yeah, I just wish that the teacher hadn't called her Michelle so that we wouldn't have another name for her, because I think that's dumb. I do think that's dumb. Like, just let her be, call her MJ and never say that her name is Mary Jane if you want, if for whatever reason you're married to that. But don't give her like another random name.
And on that note. Yeah. So, all right. Thanks, guys. And thanks for listening. We'll see you next week, where we're going to be a little bit later just because we have to talk about Game of Thrones, because Game of Thrones is back next Sunday. Woo!
Check us out on withanaccent.com and With an Accent on Twitter and Instagram. And don't forget to check back next week for Game of Thrones Talk.